Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're diving deep into, well, this is a heavy one, racist microaggressions and their impact on Black women in the workplace. And our guide for this deep dive is this online article, Navigating the Workplace, the Impact of Racist Microaggressions on Black Women. We'll be looking at what microaggressions are, where they come from, and the real consequences they have.
Yeah, and I think it's important to start by defining what we even mean by microaggressions, because it's not always these overt, obvious acts of discrimination. They often fly under the radar. They're disguised as compliments or just offhand remarks.
So how do you even begin to call someone out for being, like, if someone says, you're so articulate,
right?
They think they're being nice.
Yeah, and that's what makes them so dangerous. They seem harmless on the surface, maybe even positive, but they carry these implicit biases, these prejudiced attitudes toward marginalized groups. And for Black women, that articulate comment, it often translates to, you speak so well for a Black person. Yeah. It's that unspoken qualifier. That really diminishes their achievements and reinforces this stereotype that eloquence is somehow unexpected.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the article highlighted how often this plays out in meetings where a Black woman's contribution might be overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
But then a white colleague reiterates the same point.
Yeah.
And suddenly everyone's on board.
Exactly. It's like their voices are being silenced. Their expertise is dismissed. And it really speaks to the historical context here. This isn't happening in a vacuum.
No, not at all. And it makes you think about the history of race and gender in the U.S.
Right.
You know, Black women have faced this.
Yeah.
This double whammy of oppression, both because of their race and their gender.
For centuries, from slavery to the fight for equal rights that's still going on.
So despite the progress, we've had the civil rights movement, we've had the women's liberation movement, but these microaggressions persist.
They do, and it shows how deep-seated these biases are.
So let's get into some specific examples. I was reading the article, and there were a few that really jumped out at me, especially when it comes to them, like authority and respectability.
Yeah, those are big ones. Black women often have to constantly justify their authority.
It's like they have to overperform.
Exactly. Their decisions are questioned. Their expertise is doubted. It's like they're constantly needing to prove themselves.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, you have the angry Black woman stereotype, which just feels so loaded.
It is. It's a way of policing their emotions.
So they can't show passion?
They can't be assertive without being perceived as angry or aggressive.
And even something as personal as their appearance can become a battleground. You know, the article talked about how natural hairstyles are often met with disapproval.
Yeah.
Or even outright discrimination.
Yeah. It's really highlighting how these seemingly minor incidents, they can accumulate over time and create a hostile work environment.
It makes me wonder about the psychological impact of all of this. I mean,
yeah.
It can't just be water off a duck's back, all these little things adding up.
No, it takes a toll. And researchers have actually linked chronic exposure to microaggressions with increased stress, anxiety, and even depression.
That makes sense. You know, it's like this constant drip, drip, drip of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it just wears you down. The article mentioned this term racial battle fatigue.
Yes.
And I've never heard of that before, but it really resonated.
Yeah. Racial battle fatigue is that feeling of exhaustion, both mental and emotional, from constantly having to navigate these racist encounters, these microaggressions.
It's like carrying an invisible weight around.
Exactly. So always being on high alert.
Yeah.
Always having to defend your worth.
And the article mentioned that this fatigue doesn't just stay at work.
Right. It spills over into their personal lives. Mm. It impacts their relationships, their self-esteem, their well-being.
So it affects everything.
It does.
And you know, it's important to remember, these are not just hurt feelings.
Mm.
These microaggressions have real-world consequences, tangible impacts on their careers, their lives.
Absolutely.
So I know we need to take a break soon, but before we do, I want to get into those consequences a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easy to dismiss them as just, you know, people being too sensitive. But I think it's important to understand how these things actually play out.
They do. And one of the biggest consequences is that it can really hinder career advancement.
So it affects their ability to move up in their careers.
Exactly. And it contributes to the wage gap that exists between Black women and their white counterparts.
Yeah. And the article mentioned that it also creates barriers to mentorship opportunities.
Right. Because microaggressions can damage workplace relationships.
Leading to higher turnover rates.
Right. It really harms the entire organization.
So it's like a self-inflicted wound to these companies?
Yes.
But before we get into what organizations can do to change this dynamic, I want to take a moment to hear from you, our listeners. What are your experiences with microaggressions in the workplace? What are some of the challenges you faced? And what are some of the strategies you found helpful for coping? Share your thoughts and reflections with us. And we'll be back in a moment to continue this important conversation.
Wow, it's been incredible hearing from you all and seeing how deeply this topic resonates. You know, it's clear these microaggressions are taking a toll. And I think it's important to really delve deeper into that emotional and psychological weight they carry.
Yeah, and I think that's where this concept of racial battle fatigue comes in. Mm-hmm. It's that chronic stress that Black women experience from constantly having to navigate these racist encounters.
The article actually gave some concrete examples of how this fatigue manifests in the workplace.
Imagine you're a Black woman. You're constantly second-guessed in meetings. Your ideas are ignored until a white colleague echoes them. That feeling of invisibility, of having to fight to be heard and respected, it takes a toll. It really does. And, you know, it's like they're constantly being told that, that they don't belong, that their voices don't matter.
And the worst part is it leaves them questioning themselves, wondering if they're being too sensitive, if they're overreacting.
Yeah.
And that self-doubt can make it even harder to speak up and advocate for themselves.
So it becomes this vicious cycle.
Right.
Where the microaggressions create this sense of self-doubt,
right,
which makes it even harder to push back against those same microaggressions.
And all of that can lead to increased anxiety, difficulty sleeping, even physical health problems.
It's like their bodies are constantly in fight or flight mode.
That's a great way to put it. And that's where the importance of building resilience comes in.
Yeah.
You know? Finding ways to manage that stress, to process those difficult emotions.
So mindfulness and stress reduction techniques.
Exactly. Things like meditation, deep breathing exercises, yoga.
It's about giving them the tools to cope.
And then the article also emphasized the importance of support networks.
Right.
Having people that they can turn to who understand what they're going through.
That's so important. Whether it's a group of colleagues, a mentor, or a support group specifically for Black women.
Yeah, just having that space to be vulnerable.
Right. To share their experiences without fear of judgment.
But it can't just be about coping. Right.
No.
We also need to be pushing for real change, for dismantling those systems that perpetuate these harmful behaviors.
Absolutely.
And that's where allyship comes in.
Right.
But it can be tricky because these microaggressions are often so subtle. How do you even call that out without, you know, causing a huge scene?
It's a delicate balance. But even a simple, that's not okay, or I don't think that's appropriate, can send a powerful message.
It shows you're not going to tolerate that behavior.
Exactly.
So it's about using your voice.
And educating yourself, becoming more aware of these subtle forms of bias.
And the article talked about the importance of organizational change as well.
Right.
Creating policies and procedures that address these issues head on.
It can't just be about individual actions. There needs to be a systemic shift.
So, diversity and inclusion training. Clear reporting mechanisms.
Holding people accountable for their behavior.
Creating a culture where everyone feels safe and respected.
That's the goal.
And it benefits everyone.
It does. When we create more inclusive and equitable workplaces, we create spaces where everyone can thrive.
It's not just about doing the right thing. It's also about doing the smart thing.
Right.
Well, this has been an incredible conversation so far.
It has.
We've covered so much ground. But before we dive into the next part of our discussion, which will focus more on solutions and strategies for creating lasting change.
I want to leave our listeners with a question.
Okay.
What's one concrete action you can take, either in your personal or professional life, to challenge microaggressions and contribute to a more inclusive and equitable environment?
We want to hear from you. Share your ideas with us. And we'll be back in a moment to continue this conversation and explore those solutions together. It's been so inspiring hearing your pledges for action. You know, change really does start with each of us. But building on that energy, let's explore what those solutions look like, not just individually, but on an organizational and societal level.
And what's so fascinating is how interconnected those levels are. You know, individual actions, they create ripples. But for sustained change, organizations need to become proactive.
So more than just damage control. We need to create a culture where these things, these microaggressions, don't take root in the first place.
Exactly. And that starts with leadership. That's not just diverse on paper, but truly committed to inclusion.
So it's about fostering an environment where everyone feels empowered to speak up.
Knowing that their concerns will be taken seriously.
And I imagine that requires a massive shift in mindset for a lot of organizations.
It does. It's about recognizing that the most valuable insights often come from those who've been traditionally silenced or marginalized.
And it's not just about listening to those voices. It's about integrating those perspectives into decision-making.
At every level.
So giving Black women a real seat at the table.
Where policies and procedures are being shaped.
Alongside that, we need training programs that go beyond just checking boxes.
Yeah. It's not enough to just define microaggressions. We need to equip people with the skills to recognize them, to understand their impact, and to intervene effectively.
Give them the tools to be active bystanders.
Exactly.
And the article highlighted the need for safe and accessible reporting mechanisms.
Yeah. Because it can't just be about venting frustrations. There needs to be a clear process for addressing these incidents.
And consequences for those who violate the policies.
Right. It's about accountability.
And this ties into a larger conversation we need to have as a society about race, gender, and power.
Absolutely.
The article touched on the historical context.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ignore how those legacies continue to shape the experiences of Black women today.
It's about understanding the systemic nature of these issues.
So creating a world where Black women are seen, heard, and valued.
Not just for their resilience, but for their brilliance, their leadership, their full humanity.
It's a beautiful vision.
And it might feel overwhelming, but every action contributes to that shift.
No matter how small.
Whether it's speaking up against a microaggression, supporting organizations fighting for racial justice, or educating yourself and others about these issues.
It all makes a difference.
Because it's about recognizing our collective power.
And remembering that this isn't just about Black women.
Creating a society free from these microaggressions benefits all of us.
It really does.
It creates a more inclusive, more vibrant, more humane world for everyone.
This has been such an incredible conversation.
It has.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom and insights with us.
And thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, we hope this deep dive has challenged you, inspired you, and given you some concrete steps to take action in your own lives. Remember, even small acts of kindness and allyship can have a ripple effect. Let's continue to learn, to grow, and to work together. You create a world where everyone can thrive. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and keep making those ripples or can